Hello everybody, my name's Bernadette Russell and welcome to episode 3 of my new podcast series, How to Be Hopeful. If you were listening to the last episode, episode 2, I interviewed the lovely Dawn Atkinson from Evelyn Community Store. She asked me quite rightly for a small correction. I accidentally sort of promoted her. She enjoyed listening very much, but she did say that she doesn't actually run the store. She's just a clog in the wheel. I think she might have meant a cog in the wheel. She's a committee secretary, but just a small part of an amazing team. And I thought that was an important correction and also an important point, actually, because we're all just small clogs and cogs in parts of the machine. And it's all of us doing it together, which makes things wonderful and hopeful. So anyway, this week is the first of what I hope will be many conversations about the importance of looking after and taking care of yourself as a way of fortifying hope and being happier. As I said before, this podcast isn't about COVID, but we can't ignore it because it's right here with us right now. And it has brought lots of terrible, awful, horrible things and loss, which it's really important to recognise. But it's also brought some tremendous gifts. And one of them is the encouragement to take care of our mental health and well-being. I've been lucky enough over the last few weeks during lockdown to have my daily allotted allowed time of exercise to walk through Russia Docks, which is a beautiful woodland near my house. And I've been taking that time to really listen, to the beautiful birds as a daily act of self-care. Paying attention to all the beautiful things in spring, the flowers, the incredibly ridiculously blue sky. Actually, today it was just nature was completely showing off. The blossoms were falling from the tree like everyone was at a wedding and all the flowers were out. The sky was perfectly blue. And one of the delightful things, as always, was the sound of birdsong, undiluted and uninterrupted by cars or aeroplanes. It was so quiet you could hear the trees creaking. Here's the sound of some of the birds near us as we went for a walk this morning. So that's a little bit of what I've been doing, just to take a few moments every day to soothe my anxiety and any negative feelings that might come up. Just to take a little bit of time to sort of appreciate beauty and to enjoy that and to allow myself to enjoy that. But how to hear how else we might be able to look after ourselves during this very challenging time, I had a chat with my old mucker, Kate Bailey, an old and dear friend of mine, who is a self-described evangelist of self-care, to see if she had some tips for us. As always, please forgive the less than perfect recording. I'm getting a little bit better each week as I get more used to the sort of remote creation malarkey, and I hope you enjoy our conversation. Yeah, so first of all, could you just tell me your name and, actually, first of all, just talk a little bit about how we know each other.
So we met when we were 16. Were you 17 or 16?
I think I was 17.
And I was 16. I was 16 going on 17. And basically, that sums us up because, like, literally, the sense of humour hasn't changed since then,
no,
I don't think.
No.
We're still all doing things like that. In English, I think that's how we first. Well, I was aware of you because you were like a superstar at Sixth Form College. It's like you were kind of this legendary character that everyone wanted to know. So I was a bit in awe of you. But then we took English together and sort of became friends and did Godspell together.
I remember that. I remember being in awe of you in English. You and Claire were really good at, you kind of write poem kind of had poetry battles together. Do you remember? But written, not like rappers. And they were really good. They were really good. And then you were really funny in Godspell. I remember you getting pushed in a long line doing some sort of brilliant clowning singing thing.
Oh,
it was good.
Yeah, I've just read, it's really funny because that song, I often find myself singing it. It's obviously Lodge because it's the first bit of kind of public singing I ever did. And I was really nervous, even though I loved to sing. I was super, super nervous. So, yeah.
It's good. And we've been together ever since.
We have. Well, we lost because we were like friends before the internet. So then we lost track of each other, didn't we, after uni? And then we bumped into each other at Camden Market.
Oh, yeah. We both come to London.
Yeah.
We've sort of walked in parallel, haven't we, since then, in a way.
Yeah.
On parallel paths. So it'd be nice to, be, to come back to you a little bit about singing in a minute, actually, because I've sort of been thinking about how, in this particularly strange time that we are at the moment, sort of being creative on your own or being creative together is really super helping. But before we get on to that, could you just talk a little bit about what you're doing now, Kate Bailey? Superstar.
Yeah. What what I'm doing now is I'm really involved in the project stroke, I don't know what it is, organisation stroke.
Movement.
Movement, yeah, like that. Called Love Sober.
Mm-hmm.
And it started as a blog where I'd been blogging for years and years on anonymously on a sobriety forum called Soberistas. And I was working with a coach who I'd met on there just because she was wanting to practice. So she gave me some coaching sessions. And very quickly, when we looked at actually what I wanted to be doing, is that I really wanted to be working in this area, and I wanted to be coaching, I wanted to be writing, and I wanted to be public speaking, and I wanted to kind of be an advocate and an activist in this area, but to change the conversation from one of addiction and the kind of disease of it to one of something that people can relate to more, like change the sort of questions around it, so, and see it as a positive, a really powerful kind of positive life choice. Instead of this kind of sad, inevitable kind of consequence of not being able to drink, to actually say, well, let's call bullshit on this, let's ask ourselves better questions about how it makes us feel and how we disconnect and what it's actually feeling like. And work with wellness.
You made me think about it a lot, because I don't mean this in a disrespectful way, but in a positive way. When you first started talking about it, I was just thinking about sort of popular culture tropes and how strong that messaging is, particularly Nicolas Cage and Elizabeth Shue in Leaving Las Vegas. When, you know, that story's horrible. He kind of goes to drink himself to death, but it's hugely sort of romantic and...
Yeah.
Deeply sort of romanticising and idealising in a way this really dysfunctional relationship. And you really made me think about that. And I thought, actually, there's so much of that messaging, isn't there? That sort of romantic addict genius thing, which isn't very helpful.
Yeah, I think there's that. I think there's a lot of things floating about. I think there's that, the sort of suffering artist stroke addict. And I think that was sort of quite 90s, you know, that sort of noir kind of thing, American, sort of Blue Velvet. It was all that kind of slight sort of dark underbelly, and it was very romanticised. But the one that kind of really sticks out to me really is it's a gender thing and it's a mum thing, because I think then it got all linked with the Honest Parenting Movement and Hurrah for Gin and stuff like that. And actually it was this generation's corset and Valium, you know, it's Mum's Little Helper. And that, I think, is very, very destructive.
Terms of people sort of exploring honest parenting, part of that conversation was a sort of celebration of being able to have a gin and tonic. Is that right?
Well... Yeah, kind of. I mean, the first time I heard Wine O'Clock, I was at a soft play centre and I literally laughed my head off because I was like, that's amazing. And thank God I'm not the only one who's finding this incredibly tough. And actually what it was that, you know, I had a problematic relationship with alcohol. And it was linking to mental health. It was linking to anxiety. So it was not like, oh, well, it's fine if you have a gin and tonic. Yeah, of course it is. You haven't got a problem. But what it is it normalises and almost advocates alcohol as a kind of faux self-care and a faux answer to actually asking better questions like, I need childcare. I need to be paid equally so I can afford someone some more childcare. You know, what do I need? I need rest. I need respite. I need support. So we're taught to go and have a glass of wine instead of asking much better questions about what we actually need. So I think it's a real feminist issue.
Yeah, it's really powerful. It's a feminist issue and a valuing people and valuing parents issue, isn't it? And one of the things that sort of interested me, Kate, in the context of this wild time that we find ourselves in at the moment, in the midst of COVID-19, is how you particularly talked to me about how you found support and a tribe, if you like, online. And you introduced me to a sort of very positive interaction of those online communities. And I'm aware that a lot of people are now discovering what you and many other people discovered a long time ago, that actually you can find a family, you can find a tribe online, and that can be hugely supportive. So could you just talk a little bit about that, about how you found your online gang and how that helped?
Yeah. You know, I think it's really true. I think thank God for technology in this time because, I've just had that lovely thing about teaching my mum to kind of FaceTime, and my brother who is in India bought her an iPad so that they can Zoom each other, you know, and it's like, thank God we have, I think it's great. I remember saying to Mandy, who I do the podcast with, that anyone who has ever been othered in any way has probably been preparing for this in terms of coping with some form of social isolation and having to find tribes in maybe unconventional ways or having to work a bit harder at it. So, you know, I think that's, you know, true sort of for the gay community as well, maybe, you know, or certainly anything that's slightly taboo, which it was when I started. I don't think it is so much anymore. You know, that online communities really were the thing that kind of, they were my saving grace, really. I found an online group called Soberistas, and it was the first thing when I Googled, you know, that thing, you know, when you've been drinking and you wake up at 3 a.m. and just with sort of sweating and anxious, like that horrible anxiety. And I used to Google, you know, things like how many units I should have, or am I an alcoholic, for about like the millionth time. And I saw Soberistas pop up, and it was the first website that hadn't scared the living daylights out of me, like have a triangle on like the Illuminati or something, or talk about disease or addiction. You know, it was just all of this language which I just felt was awful and put me off. So I started blogging on Soberistas. I'd never blogged before. Mm. And it said, oh, create a profile, it's anonymous. So I was like, okay. And then I thought, I'd never blogged, but I wrote this kind of who I was and what the issue was. And I said, you know, I've never lost my driving license. I've got two lovely kids. You know, I live in a really nice house. So I've been kind of, but I know that there's something off with this, you know, but I don't identify as an alcoholic because surely that's an old man on a park bench, paper bag, you know, all those kind of stereotypes. And then I pressed send and then I went to sleep and I woke up in the morning and checked and I had about 9 responses.
Wow.
To say, we know exactly where you're at. We feel the same. This is what we've been doing, just check in daily, blog, get in touch with us, you know, and it was just this real welcoming. And I just felt like I'd been thrown a lifeline. I was like, okay. And I just stopped then and I just didn't drink for a year. So I just completely stopped. So that's how I kind of used online. And then I became pen pals with somebody, because then what happens is you tend to break off and find people that you really connect with.
Yeah.
And so you might start a WhatsApp group, or you might email each other. And I emailed a woman called Faye, who we emailed every single day throughout that whole year.
Oh.
And we didn't meet each other till after 6 months. It was like a blind date.
Oh, that's so nice.
I had an amazing time, yeah.
I'm really interested in the moment, as you say, it's surfaced, the sort of online community building and access has surfaced as a beautiful positivity. And I'm really glad, because I love technology, and I love what it's given us. And I think we often are told the negative, bleak sides of it, but actually there's loads of beautiful things like that you've described. And in terms of that, having that sort of support, Kate, which you've obviously built and now become part of, because you're part of that support structure. Mm. And as you've spoken to me about and speak about on your own podcast, sort of developing this toolkit of self-care, do you feel like in this particular time at the moment, and you might not, this is, I genuinely don't know the answer to this myself, but whether it feels like self-care and considering what you need to do, that's more important now?
Yeah, I think we've got an emergency situation. So I think it's a time of heightened anxiety. So I think there's two things. I mean, I really believe, as a sober life advocate, Kate, and a wellness kind of self-care evangelist,
hallelujah,
with the training wheels still very much on, because I think it's a daily practice. It's not like, oh well, I had a massage and now I'm sorted for my self-care. I truly believe that self-care is basically having a dialogue with yourself and learning the art of listening in and then identifying what you might need. And I think for many of us, we are not encouraged to do that, and it's actually harder than it sounds. It's like, oh well, how do I feel and what do I need? I mean, who knows? Like, you know, if you've not been used to doing it, especially, you know, I'll speak from the sobriety point of view. If you've been like used to kind of going, oh, I feel a bit crap, I'll have a glass of wine, or I feel really good, I'll have a glass of wine, you don't necessarily know what to do with your feelings. Yeah. So I think as a general thing, I think self-care is it's got this kind of fluffy reputation, right? But I actually think it's really powerful. I think it's about self-leadership, because it is the practice of giving yourself tools to boss your life,
yeah,
and become reliant on yourself. And once you've got this inevitable, beautiful self-confidence, I think, that comes from actually caring for yourself and having your own back, knowing how to talk to yourself, knowing when to rest, knowing, you know, when to get angry, knowing how to dial things down. Like, we're talking about actually quite a complex, evolved state. And I do believe that self-care is that. I think that it's just got this kind of almost Boots logo on it, or a L'Oreal logo, yeah, on it. It's like, it, but actually it's really deep. I think it's deep work. I think it's the work of life.
Yeah.
So that's what self-care is. I think it can be from outside. It can often start outside in, like I could talk about sober treats, or, you know, having a physical blanket, toolkit, things that calm the nervous system. And then it leads into practices which are inside out, like self-compassion practice, gratitude practice, and all the science of happiness kind of modalities that help us boost our own happiness and our well-being and self-regulate. So that's sort of self-care as in a kind of overview. And I think it's especially important now that we've got some of those tools, because it links very much with mental health, and we've got a mental health crisis probably for a lot of people with heightened anxiety. And so it's really important that we know how to regulate our nervous systems, practice self-compassion, and manage anxiety. So, you know, that again, I think self-care is very pertinent for. And, you know, we can go into specific and talk about why, if you want, you know, specific tools. Or
if somebody was listening to this right now, I'm just thinking about, because I'm aware from conversations I've been having, all of the things that you're saying, a massive uptick in anxiety and worry. And people are fighting their own battles, and they're hugely varied. As an expert, if you were to give someone sort of, this is just a really simple daily practice you can do to soothe yourself.
Yeah.
If that's not too sort of asking you to pull a trick out of a rabbit out of a hat,
yeah,
would you have something?
I'd probably have to do a package of three.
Ooh.
So I think what helps me is I get up before the kids and I have a moment to do some intention and do some breathing and meditating. And I really rubbish at meditating, but again, it's practice. So even if your mind, all you do is if your mind wanders off, you just kind of bring it back to the breath. And I use an app called Insight Timer, which is really lovely. And that has lots of different things about mindfulness and stuff like that on. This is something that, and then I do a reflection at the end of the day, what went well, how did that happen, how am I feeling? So those are check-ins. And then the other thing I do is, and I call it my call to a cup of tea 5 times a day. I think I've talked to you about this, but I got fascinated with the Islamic call to prayer.
Yeah.
And what that was, and I think it's a beautiful, beautiful practice. And I found, because I've been in lockdown, I'm lying down on the floor a lot. And I lied and I thought, well, what happens if I just stopped 5 times a day and had a drink of water, had a cup of tea, lay down on the ground and have that check-in? How am I feeling? Do a quick body scan. And what I found is it regulates me. So instead of suddenly waving away red flags of needing a wee, you know, you might be working at home and getting stressed out about that, ignoring hungry, you might get to a really triggered, anxious state by the end of the day and then feel really crap. You then may go to your coping mechanisms or something like drinking too much or overeating that's going to make you feel worse and trigger more anxiety, or whatever it is, you might get online and start doing online shopping or gambling or whatever it is, that those kind of practices of self-regulating and checking in, saying, how am I? I think that's can help you not to get to that crisis point at whenever your kind of big trigger time might be. The other thing I would do is within that, I follow a practice called RAIN, which is recognize. So that is an acronym, recognize. Okay, this is a feeling of anxiety. Allow, which means that you experience it in the body. Investigate, so you sit with it. And then the last bit, which I was never good at, is nurture. So you go, well, what do I need? So what do I need to hear? And it could be, you know, it's okay, sweetheart. You're going to be all right. And you just need to breathe. Tomorrow's going to be fine. So you find a way of talking to yourself like you would a child or someone you love, and you're comforting them.
Mm.
So that's the process of RAIN. And the last bit of that is somatics, lying down on the floor, calming your nervous system. There's a really lovely practice where you take your right hand and you put it under your left armpit, and then you take your left hand and you just hold onto the top of your arm and you rub it.
Oh, I'm doing it now.
Just sit there and breathe. And what that does is it sends a message from body up to the brain, up your polyvagal nerve, that you're safe and you're being held. And it's a way, it's called what's it called? Propriatic feedback. I don't know what the scientific term, but basically it's giving yourself a hug. And that sends a message to your body. After it, probably about 5-10 minutes you could do it from, it sends a message to your brain that you're safe, and it helps you come down. And then your brain can think more clearly.
I love that. I'm doing it. I was doing it then, and even for a moment I liked it. I was just going to say as well that the RAIN thing you referred to, that's Tara Brach. Is that Tara Brach?
That yeah. comes from, well, she uses it. I think it's an acronym that's been used by many, but Tara Brach, the RAIN of self-compassion, on YouTube was a life changer for me because I hadn't actually ever done it. So I'd always gone, oh, right, well, I feel a bit shit. Right, okay. Oh, yeah, that's a bit shit. And then I've gone, oh, okay, chop, chop. Right, come on then, what should we do? Let's shake it out. I'd never actually just sat with myself or offered any comfort.
Yeah. And I think what you said about daily practice and actually frequent practice during the day is really important. I always think it's like anything, isn't it? you need to, if you want to play the ukulele, you need to play it every day. If you need to get stretchier, you need to do it every day. And actually, it puts less pressure on then. I always used to think, occasionally I would do something to treat myself, and then the pressure on that to make me better was enormous. Whereas actually, if I just do like 20 minutes yoga in the morning, I can always do that. Does that make sense? And so it feels...
Yeah, and it's sort of tiny steps make massive change over time. And I never realised that. I was always like one for the grand gesture, thinking, right, okay, I'm going to sort everything out. I'm going to lose a stone in a day by eating air.
Going into a sauna.
Eating those chilies. No, and and I think that thing about looking for bright spots as well. So the other part of that, those kind of calming things, but the other thing that I think really helps me was to, this might sound a bit weird, but to say I'm allowed to be happy as well. I'm allowed to jump around the garden. I'm really lucky I've got a garden at the moment. I'm allowed to be okay. I don't have to, you know, and I'm allowed to grab those moments.
Yeah.
And also changing your set, like put the Spotify playlist on in the kitchen and just have a dance to disco, you know. Yeah. Like my husband Dave.
Yeah.
The things he did the first couple of days of lockdown, our daughter Ella came in the morning, and Dave had taken to, I've got an Alexa by my bed, and just as I was trying to sleep, Dave would go, Alexa, play Bhangra. And then it would like kick off, right? So we've started listening, and like, honestly, there's nothing that will cheer me up like dancing to a bit of Bhangra. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh. So
that's become our final soundtrack to lockdown.
That's another top tip. I think there's something really nice about dancing as well. I'm hoping to talk to my friend who's a dancer and a choreographer soon about this, actually, because it just kind of wild dancing, not sort of choreographed dancing, just sort of crazy in your pants in the kitchen dancing is really wonderful, I think, especially if I'm quite controlling. So to let myself not be controlling is a holiday.
You don't have to do the robot. You can...
Although, you say that, but my robot is pretty good.
That's what I like about lying down on the floor and waving your arms and your legs around like seaweed. It's like this sort of instinctive movement, and you can do it now because we're not going out.
Yeah.
The amount of stuff you can actually get up, the amount of dressing up you could get up to.
Yeah, there was a wonderful thing on Facebook a couple of days ago about these brilliant Australians. I mean, I love Australians. They're such brilliant people. Yep. But the whole place had started wearing fancy dress costume to put the recycling out.
Saw that.
Oh, my gosh. Amazing. I was just like, I love you. And then it spread, obviously, because the wonderful thing, again, about social media is we see something, then we're like, oh, my God, I'm being a mermaid as well to do the recycling. And so it spreads. So as well as there being a sort of therapeutic and creative response, I think there's been a really good humoured response in it all as well. And actually, you saying that, Kate, about having time now to do the fancy dress and do all these things sort of leads me nicely onto I've been trying to sort of investigate with people a little bit. And obviously it can feel a bit, I don't mean this in a trite or disrespectful way, because I know there's lots of suffering and enormous loss going on, but it feels really important also for us to think about what positive change has happened for us. And I was going to ask you that, really, if you think any positive changes have happened, and if they have, are there any that you'd like to keep hold of post-COVID?
Yeah, I mean, I'm wary of it in a way, because I don't know yet. It's like I was thinking, I was kind of thinking to myself, oh, isn't it lovely? I've got all this time to reflect. And then I spoke to a good friend of mine called Silas, and their yoga studio has gone online now. And he said, you know, we're still in it. It's like, I don't even know how to reflect yet.
No.
So I'm not sure about that, but I do feel like, you know, there's the undoubtable thing about, like, you know, I'm hoping it'll stop the march of capitalism.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that we're realising that how important carers are.
Yeah.
And all the frontline staff, you know, that have been badly paid and that we take for granted are being seen and being called heroes, and I hope that there will be a shift in payment structures for carers.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. You know, I hope that, I think when all this is over, we're just going to have a massive party and we're not going to stop hugging everyone for about 100 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we're just going to go and hug all the time. And we are going to, I don't know, you know, I was just thinking today, I am lucky where I live because we were able to go, I can go out and get food. And I just sort of had this sort of sense of loss of just, you know, and this may, I feel, you know, there is that guilt around it, isn't it? That people, you know, there's this bigger picture. But I felt like I really just wanted to sit and go and have a coffee somewhere and people watch, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think that's what I was going to come on to, actually. I think it's important to sort of, to stay with yourself and say, actually, even though acknowledging that other people are losing things and other people are, what have I learned or kept or changed that would be good? Mm-hmm. And also to say, what have I missed? And I found my friend encouraged me to keep, every time I thought of something, to put it in a jar, in an empty pasta jar. I've put it in a jar. And actually it's quite useful because what's been really beautiful is how ordinary and everyday the things are. They're not extraordinary. And I found that massively comforting because I can do them again. They're not like, you know, bungee jumping off a waterfall. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not yet anyway. So your things would be going out for coffee with a friend and...
Yeah. Going out for coffee with a friend, going to my yoga studio, which is my, you know, it's my well-being and my community and, you know, sort of my people on the ground. You know, just the school run. I never thought I'd say the school run, but yeah, the school run.
It's interesting how ordinary things and everyday things have revealed themselves to be precious.
Treasures.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I am genuinely grateful to be reminded of that. And that has been a gift that this time has given me. I wouldn't have had that.
Do you know what I was doing this morning, again, on the Insight Timer? There's a woman called Melly. I don't know what her surname is, but she runs the Mindfulness Summit. She's an Australian, back to lovely Australians. And she's just got this amazing kind of soothing Aussie voice that just, you are doing mindfulness, but you could be in a kind of beach bar or, you know, down with surfer chicks. You know what I mean? It's that kind of lovely honey glazed Australian voice. And today's was about gratitude, and she was saying that, you know, you do this kind of mind, and I think that's quite important for now, just to try to stay present, because that's what we can control. You know, and if we're okay now, that can stop us spinning out and getting anxious, because actually we're all right now, you know. And it's that kind of practice again. And what she's saying, she said something beautiful about gratitude changes your mindset. It's a really good anchor from what could be or what you're, you know, from a lack to really seeing everything in the present moment.
Mm.
And it becomes very abundant. And,
yeah, you know, abundant.
It's that kind of thing that can sound worthy, but I think it's what you're talking about. It's actually we're seeing things. You know, what we love and what we have. And even that, and she, I know she ended this thing by, I was just lying down again before I got interrupted by my kids. Which I was really grateful for. Which was that, you know, even if you're having a bad day, you can actually just feel your heart beating and the miracle that you can hear what you can hear. Do you know what I mean? It's like there are things. If you wanna do it, it's there. You
know? Yeah, I mean, and it is a gift of this time that although it feels like an opportunity to acknowledge all of it, the loss and the pain, but also the beauty and the gain, you know, all of it.
Yeah.
And that for me, and I've learned that from you, that feels really important to be very honest about all of it, to not, you know, I sometimes talk about the tyranny of positivity, and I think I've talked to you about it, and that's not that I'm anti-positivity, but sometimes it means that people feel they can't say, well, actually, I'm really cross, or I'm, you know, so the allowing ourselves in this really extreme time to practice that, actually. It's a great opportunity.
Yeah.
And you were saying about the roller coaster of the day, like the one day is everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is the whole kaleidoscope of feelings and stuff. But I know I'm looking for it and I'm focusing very much on hope at the moment, but I have found lots of hope. I find it every day and it's because I seek it. So that makes sense. Mm. But I wonder if you've found hope in this time.
Yeah. I mean, I think I feel, I don't know whether, you know, whether we're born like we are, you know, what's nature, what's nurture.
Yeah.
And because I am a hugely, hugely optimistic person anyway.
Yeah.
So like, I'll be in a mood and then I'll see something pretty. It's like that kind of highly distractible magpie thing. Oh, that's shiny.
Or like a monkey.
Pardon?
More like a monkey.
Yeah. I am like a monkey.
You're a bonobo.
And so I enjoy being happy. So I tend to seek out positivity and happiness. So yeah, it's sort of quite, and I guess I work with the work with sobriety and the science of happiness. I suppose I've developed a practice for a number of years to do that, to look out for positives. So my brain is kind of, you know, when you went back to at the beginning when you said, you know, about people finding online communities and the self-care toolkit, I do think that, you know, a lot of that, which is evidence-based to make you happier and more positive and be able to look for hopeful things, you know, it is there. So, and it is a practice. So, I don't know if I answered your question.
No, it's interesting. It's kind of like acknowledging that you can teach yourself, I suppose. It's sort of acknowledging you can teach yourself to look for happiness. It's interesting, Kate, because I have a couple of people who I'm really fond of who I interact with online, who always respond negatively to everything. And I've become a little bit gentler about that and thought, actually, maybe some people enjoy that, have pleasure in that. I don't mean because they're, you know, whereas I am a seeker of the light.
My husband's a bit like that.
Is it? Dave, is he? I mean...
Yeah, he's all like happy with everyone else, but he doesn't half bend my ear.
I mean, there's a lot of wit in that, you know, and I think it's fine. It's just if you're, I suppose I'm interested in if that stops being helpful, if you get into such a despairing state that you can't function very well.
Do you know what? I saw this quote yesterday and I thought it was quite pertinent for this time. And it said, soothe the small stuff and grieve the big stuff. And I thought that was quite good because it says, okay, well, some things could be big to you that aren't to other people. But again, it all starts with, for me, it all starts with that question of, you know, checking in, getting still and saying, well, how am I doing? Like, and those are my check-ins. If I don't do that, I don't know. I'm just on autopilot. So those like gentle interruptions to autopilot, to just have a little think and then check your emotional barometer and then just go, well, what might make me feel better today? Is it a hug? Is it a blanket? Is it a sleep? Do I need to dance in the kitchen? And what you are looking out for, there's a whole biochemical thing here that I could talk about, is bright spots, because that's a biochemical match that your nervous system and your brain that set off a neurotransmitter that is what you were needing. So you could journal, you know, you've got time to journal now, right? Unless you're homeschooling and working, obviously. But so again, you could be quite a detective and look out for your bright spots and record them and know that they are actually, they're brain training.
So that's sort of neurochemical fireworks, if you like, which indicate.
Yeah, it is. So yeah, and you know, there's that exercise we did today with the kind of hugging yourself and putting your right hand in your armpit and soothing, that works on the neurotransmitter of GABA, which calms you down.
Amazing. Yeah?
And then if you're going to dance around the kitchen, you can boost your serotonin levels and your dopamine levels. So
love a
again,
bit of that.
That will bring you up if you're low, or just, and that could work on the GABA as well, because it's shaking out tension. And all you're doing with any kind of self-care is self-regulating your nervous system so that you can generate options for yourself that are soothing.
And what's GABA?
GABA, it's called something, something, something acid.
Okay. No, that's fair enough.
It's got this really long name that I don't know, but it's the one that is linked with anxiety. So if your GABA is sufficient, you're more likely to be anxious.
Right. So that is a neurochemical thing again.
Yeah. Neurotransmitter.
Neurotransmitter. Yeah. Right. So this is excellent, Kate. That's really good. And I think I'll hopefully direct people towards the Signs for Happiness as a resource as well, which would be really interesting if people want to find out more. But should people want to find out more about your good self and the amazing things that you do, how might they do that and what do you offer?
Yeah, okay. So the easiest way is to go to lovesober.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then all our stuff is on that. And we do a podcast weekly, and we have, it's Mandy and I, and we started it, we still do it, at a kitchen table with a cup of tea. And we're talking about motherhood, mental health, everything, but through a sober lens, because we're both sober. So we very much we look at neurodiversity, because I'm parent of a neurodiverse child as well. So it's really looking at the whole of life and parenting and whatever comes up. And at the moment, obviously, we're talking quite a lot about anxiety and COVID and wellness strategies. So that's the podcast. I'm also a professional personal performance coach and a grey area drinking coach and a She Recovers coach. So that covers where you're a bit of life coaching and also has the element of well-being coaching and also with an alcohol focus as well. So there's that, and there's online courses there. And that's
sort of thing. So courses. Basically,
oh yeah, and we've got a book out in September. Yeah, we've got a book out for mums called Love Yourself Sober. Which
sober
is our answer kind of to the mummy wine culture and asking better questions about what you need.
Amazing. So basically all of those, the first stop is the website, because everything's on there. Brilliant. Okay, Kate, that's amazing. And what were you doing for the rest of the day?
What am I doing for the rest of the day?
Have you had cups of tea yet?
Yeah, but I've kind of had all of them before like 7 a.m. You know what I'm like.
Yeah.
I've always said I drink like tea than the Irish, haven't I? So what will I be doing? Well, I'm going to spend a bit of time in the garden, because I know that's going to be some well-being. I'm going to do yoga. We're going to make pizzas with the kids later, and then we're going to do a family quiz with the extended family tonight. We're going to do like a pub quiz, but at home.
It's lovely. So there's loads of that stuff going on, aren't there? Really nice sort of Zoom gaming and house party gaming and brilliant. All right, darling. Well, thank you so much. I've done some yoga. I'm gonna do a bit of meditating and a bit of gardening. I've got work to do today, but I have been sort of trying to make time for those things as well. So, and I might follow your lead and do the hugging thing, and also lying on my back and waving my hands in the air.
Oh,
like I just don't care.
Tell me how it feels if you like it.
I will. I already kind of think I will love it. Thinking about it makes me feel really happy.
Well, it's a bit like being a baby, isn't it? It's a bit like being a baby doing
and babies,
letting yourself.
As my friend said, even though babies are busy, they're happy. He's right. He was like, he said, whenever you say you're busy as an adult, you must remember you are never as busy as a baby. And I just thought that was one of the best things I'd ever heard. It's true. If you think about their learning curve, they've got a lot to be getting on with. All right, my darling, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure.
To talk about my favourite subjects.
It's lovely.
And well done for all the hope. Hope is on the agenda massively.
Hope is on the agenda. Bye, darling.
Bye, love.
Bye. Thank you. thank you very much for listening. I always really enjoy talking to Kate. She's a really great reminder of the importance and the strength that can be gained from really simple acts of self-care. And those of you that have listened before will know that I like to invite you to join in a little challenge. We're restricted at the moment as to what we can do and where we can go, and a lot of people are missing hugging each other and being with people. But what we do have, wherever we are, even if it's in a high-rise flat looking at a little patch of sky, or if we're lucky enough to have a garden, or even lucky enough to be able to go outside, is the absolute beauty of this spring and early summer. So just as a way of treating yourself and looking after yourself and taking care of yourself, if this is the kind of thing that makes you feel better, just pay attention to one beautiful thing. Find one thing, you'll probably find more than one thing, but have a look out for one thing that you find incredibly beautiful in the natural world today. If you're looking out of a window, as I said, from high rise flat, that might be clouds, or might be birds flying over. If you're looking out the window into a garden or into a street, it might be a street tree or a lovely plant that's in blossom. And I hope you get some pleasure from that, and have a wonderful week. Make sure you take care of yourselves and each other, and I'll speak to you soon.